Chapter 8. The sage's heart is as deep as an abyss. One can see why Chapter 8 of the Tao Te Ching compares the way of life to be followed by the liberation-seeking personality with water. Water is a sublime, universal symbol of the power radiations of the new life. Just as the ordinary human being lives and moves in the electromagnetic radiation field of dialectics, so the pupil who, through the sacrifice of the self, has established a liberating link with the spirit of the valley, the God in him, will enter and live in the new electromagnetic radiation field. This is the true living water which is poured out over him and fills every corner of his existence. In this stream of new power, he becomes a new creation, a new creature. He undergoes a new genesis, a new beginning. This process can be compared with the first Genesis, when the Spirit of God moved over the face of the waters and created a firmament in their midst. For when the living water is poured out over the candidate, he too gains a new firmament. It is the new Lipika, a new magnetic system which imparts to him a quite new and different personality consciousness. He is again ensouled by his only God who works for his salvation. If we shift our attention from the individual microcosmic level to the level of the cosmos and macrocosm, we can see that the same concepts must apply there too. For obviously, the God in us, the true divine human being, the source of true life in the heart sanctuary, does not live in isolation from other human gods. Just as the earthly human being experiences and is conscious in the nature of death, so by the law of analogy, the divine human being must exist in a nature of life, a quite different divine universe. The life substance, the radiation substance of that divine universe, is living water, the pure, divine, primordial substance. This divine universe, this divine primordial substance, is not separated from us by time or distance. It is here and now, interpenetrating everything, nearer than hands and feet. The living water is everywhere, and there is no place where it is not. It is even in places scorned by man. The sage knows this, and that is what makes him say, in the words of Psalm 139,
"If I ascend to heaven, thou art there.
If I descend into the realm of the dead, thou art there.
If I take the wings of the morning and go and dwell in the uttermost parts of the sea, even there thy hand shall lead me, and thy right hand shall hold me. If I say, let darkness cover me, the night shall be a light about me. Even the darkness is not dark to thee. The night is as bright as the day, for darkness is as light with thee." Now, what we are telling you about here, what we are inviting you to share in, is very much an aim of the Rosy Cross. We are expressing these ideas in the language of the ancients, using the words of the Tao Te Ching as a guide, but our activity among you is as ultra-modern as can be. Though in keeping with the most ancient tradition of all, it is utterly contemporaneous. For what are we suggesting? Nothing else, surely, than reunification with your divine other one? We are inviting you to celebrate a marriage, a spiritual marriage with the spirit of the valley, the spirit of the primordial atom, the rose.
Is this any different from the alchemical wedding of Christian Rosy Cross, as described by Johann Valentin Andrea? The rosebud in the heart sanctuary, the true seat of life, the spirit in the valley, that is your bride or bridegroom. And whatever your point of view as regards gender, that spirit is saying to you in the words of Revelation 22, which are pure Rosicrucian words.
The spirit and the bride say, "Come, and let him who is thirsty come. Let him who desires take the water of life without price." Without price. But the condition is thirst. From a desperate inner need arising from experience, your soul must begin to thirst. That thirst is yearning for salvation. My soul thirsts for you, as it says in Psalm 63. And we can also think of the words of Isaiah chapter 55. All you who suffer thirst, come to the waiters, and you who have no money, come, buy, and eat. Yes, come, buy, and eat wine and milk without money and without payment. Why do you spend your money on that which is not bread, and labor for that which cannot satisfy? Hearken to me that you may eat what is good, and delight your soul in plenteousness. Incline your ear, and come to me that your soul may live, and I shall make with you an eternal covenant. Instead of the thorn, the cypress shall spring up. Instead of the briar, the myrtle shall flourish. What astoundingly beautiful imagery! No priest, nor any spiritual school, can stand between you and the valley spirit, between you and the God in you. That covenant must be forged by you yourself in self-authority, and the spiritual school is there to help you in whatever way it can. The school possesses a power field which is filled with the living water, and its purpose is to amplify that call of your only God, which is expressed in the words, "Incline your ear to me." The school tries to be a guide to your animal ego. Lost and wandering as you are, it wants to lead you back to true happiness. At the same time, in group unity, as a living body, the school actually constitutes a mighty, magical aid to reaching the goal. So if now you have reached maturity and are weary of strife, you are free to reach for that absolute happiness. And when you do so, the stream of living water will flood over you from that moment onwards. Thus, you will become wise, so wise that others will be able to comfort and warm themselves in the light of your glory. You will become a light on the path, in the service of the brotherhood, helping the straying and the lonely to find their Lord. That is how the sage approximates Tao. The eighth chapter continues with a more detailed description of the approach to life of the person in whom this connection has been established. This approach could be called the way of life of the living water. The sage dwells in the right place. Since he is linked with the truth, he is always orientated towards the goal and is always in the right place. The sage is the truly serving brother or sister, and living in the right place also means that when such a servant appears in the life of a seeker and tells of his truth, it will always be at precisely the right moment. Not too early, not too late, but always just in time. There may have been times when you heard liberating words, but they made no impression on you. In that case, there will have been others for whom the words were intended, and who really did hear them from within. Yet one day, sooner or later, you too will hear in the right way, and then, at the right time, you will recognize the servant, your servant. Then for you, he will live, in the right place, and you will be able to enter the temple dwelling as a welcome guest. The sage's heart is as deep as an abyss. This means that in the sage there gradually matures a perfect understanding, great in its compassion and unfathomable in its love, of each individual's state of sin, each person's boundless misery. This does not mean that the servant of the brotherhood becomes a father confessor, whose heart is just a vast repository for anything and everything people want to get rid of. Neither does it mean that he is supposed to sit down and lend an ear while you pour out your whole life. History as a mortal soul, for one life story is much like any other. The details may differ, but the beginning and the end are the same. No, when we say that the sage's heart is fathomless, we mean that when one enters the valley of the heart to meet the spirit, the entire robot-like state of being falls away. and because of that the sage does not judge any mortal by the sins he has committed, but by his true thirst. He who thirsts receives the water of life freely. That is a magnetic law. He who has become pure in this way possesses as his signature a heart of fathomless depth. That is why his love is perfect. It is rooted in the new radiation field and emanates from there. That kind of love can never generate hate or vengeance. It is a love that has accompanied fallen man for an unimaginably long time, through thick and thin, never forsaking him. It goes out to save that which is lost. And if you do not want to be saved now, but you do in 1,000 years' time, then after those 1,000 long years of woe, you will still see that same love waiting for you. Then too you will hear the call, "Come unto me, all who are weary and heavy laden, and I will give you rest." He abides in the truth, and he does the truth. It is easy to understand that the sage is someone who abides in the truth and lives by it. Truth is a life field. Do you see that this is why a dialectical human being can never be true? Why dialectical truth is always a lie? Just as ugliness proves the delusion of what you call beauty, and goodness and love are displaced by the reality of antitheses, so it is with what people ordinarily call truth. You may think someone is truthful and honest, but all that really means, sadly, is that they are trying to be truthful and honest and do not consciously, deliberately, tell lies. That kind of truth has no foundation in the gnosis, in the all-manifestation, in the God in us. That is why it is speculative, partial. It arouses confusion, dispute, and conflict. It makes war. Fierce insistence on that kind of truth can cause the greatest misery, and tomorrow it may turn out to have been quite untrue. Someone who abides in the gnosis, however, abides in divine truth. That truth is a vibration, a state of being from which the sage lives and is. Does he deposit this truth in the midst of this dark world? Only in a certain sense, he vibrates in that truth, he radiates it. If you seek truth in the sense of the rosy cross, there will come a moment during your search for Tao when you taste and recognize the radiation of that truth. Only then will it really be possible to talk to you about it. As for the rest, do not think the sage will enter into disputes with you about what truth really is. If someone proves to be insusceptible, as yet, to a certain ray of truth, the sage will never argue with him. He will withdraw, creating a vacuum. Destined to govern, he maintains order. The sage's life is ordered by the laws of the living field of the living truth. A sage is a servant of the brotherhood, and in his ministry as servant, he has to gather together people who are seeking. If he is to succeed, he will need to create a certain order in his field of work. His work will need to follow a system. This system can be spoken about and discussed, and it is founded on love, truth, and gnosis, the spiritual laws of the brotherhood. All who are seeking are welcome, but there are also those who are determined to act against the spiritual order. The sage will try to help them and put them on the right track, but if it still proves impossible for them to understand the radiation of the field of the living truth, the sage will let them go for the time being, and love will wait for them until they have made enough progress to be able to move a step further. In other words, spiritual laws are irrefutable and therefore they simply cannot be opposed. It is all or nothing. The sage performs his actions well and acts at the right time. These virtues, like the others, need not amaze us if you do not live in the robot consciousness any longer, but participate in the consciousness of the gnosis. You gain the ability to act in a new way which is attuned in every detail to the essence of the holy work, to Tao. If we look at these gifts of grace in the light of Paul's words, you will perhaps understand them even better. Paul often mentions in his letters that it is not his intention to glorify himself, and he says, not I, but Christ in me. So we have tried to shed some light on the way of life of the sage who is following the path of liberation. It is our daily prayer that you, too, may walk this path. See the path, Tao. Follow the path, T. Understand the path, Ching.